The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin period, the rival of the Bruges Truce. Now, shortly after June the 17th, 1375, the messengers from Westminster and Paris returned to Bruges with the instructions of their governments. The delegations at once fell to a bitter argument, barely concealed by the cryptic documentation which records the ultimate outcome. On June the 27th, 1375, a truce of a year was sealed by John of Gaunt and Philip of Burgundy. A separate document contained the terms relating to the current operations in Normandy and Brittany. These terms represented a complete defeat for the English. Edward III was required to recall his army to England immediately, thus sealing the fate of St. Sever and depriving John de Montfort at a stroke of all his strength. John was allowed to keep just 200 men-at-arms, Breton or English, to garrison the handful of places under his control. A small personal retinue to support his dignity, but that was all. Diplomats devised a face-saving charade for Saint-Sever. It was agreed that the gathering of the French army at Saint-Sever on July the 2nd would be cancelled. The payments due to the garrison and its commanders were to be made on the appointed day in accordance with the agreements made with Catterton in May. But the fortress was to be delivered up to the two papal legates to be held temporarily in the name of the Pope. He was to hold the place as a stakeholder. If there was a permanent peace, its terms would ordain the fate of Saint-Sever. But if no peace were made by June the 1st, 1376, the place would be delivered by the Pope's custodian to the King of France on the payment of a further 40,000 francs to Edward III. The real effect of this agreement was that the English sold Saint-Sever to Charles V for 40,000 francs with a year to pay it. To underline the point, it was agreed that the Pope's custodian would be none other than the Bureau de la Riviere, French King's principal chamberlain. The painful process of extracting from taxpayers the funds to pay the garrison of Saint-Sever was almost complete. On June 4, 1375, the estates of Lower Normandy gathered before the king's commissioner in the cathedral city of Bayeux, their fifth meeting since the start of the siege. They confessed themselves incapable of raising the 60,000 francs required. Instead, they offered a third of it, which they proposed to borrow from the royal treasury and repay over a period of time by raising a forced loan from the richer inhabitants. The rest of the sum due Catterton and his men, together with the enormous cost of recruiting troops for the Journée de Saint-Sever, was contributed by the king. Total cost of the siege operation, the surrender payments, and the Journée can only be guessed, but the amount which fell upon the six dioceses of Lower Normandy alone amounted to 150,000 francs. It's about 25,000 pounds in supplementary taxes and forced loans, in addition to the ordinary burden of war taxation. This represented about four times the normal burden of the province's hearth taxes on top of the aides levied on sales. The truce came into force in Normandy on July the 2nd, 1375, the day by which Saint-Sever had to be relieved if it was not to be surrendered. Ignoring its terms, the French assembled a huge army, between 6,000 and 10,000 strong, in the fields around the fortress. The garrison was confused. The messenger sent from England with the king's instruction had not arrived. The men inside the fortress appeared to have had little information about the truce and none about the supplementary declarations which regulated the fate of the fortress. According to Froissart, they fell to arguing about whether the truce had superseded the surrender agreement or whether the earlier agreement prevailed over its latter. But Bertrand de Guesclin cut short the argument, telling the garrison that unless they surrender, he would kill all their hostages and launch an immediate assault on the walls, in which no quarter would be given. On the following morning, Saint-Sever was surrendered at the appointed time. The cash was counted out in coin and paid to the garrison. In a curious gesture of complicity, Thomas Catherton presented a tip of 2,000 francs to Jean Le Mercier, one of the French commissioners who had negotiated the surrender agreement in May, as if to show what a good bargain Le Mercier had made for the defenders. He received it with embarrassment and paid it into the funds of the province of Lower Normandy. The baggage and spoil accumulated in years of successful plundering operations was loaded on several dozen open carts, flying pennons painted with the arms of France, and escorted the harbor of Carteret to be loaded on ships for England. In Brittany, a similar scene was played out a few days later before the gates of Quimperlé, but with a very different outcome. On about June the 30th, Olivier de Clisson and his companions had made their own conditional surrender agreement with the Duke of Brittany. They accepted the bleak terms which he had offered at the outset of the siege and agreed to surrender to his mercy. But they asked for a delay of 2 weeks to uphold their honor and allow the King of France to send the relief force. John de Montfort offered them 8 days, and so it was agreed. Neither side knew anything about the truce, which was due to come in force in Brittany on July the 7th. Unfortunately for John de Montfort, this was just before the agreed date of the surrender of the town of Quimperlé. Shortly after the agreement with Olivier de Clisson had been made, two English knights arrived exhausted from Bruges with an escort of French sergeants. They had covered 450 miles in 9 days to bring a copy of the truce. They also brought the Duke of Lancaster's orders to the army to leave immediately for England. They were followed soon afterwards by Sir Matthew Redmayne, who arrived from England with a similar message from Edward III. John de Montfort was speechless with frustration and rage. If he had not made a composition with the defenders of Quimperlé, the town, and its leading enemies in the duchy would have been in his hands. After a long silence, he said to Gaunt's emissaries, quote, "Cursed be the hour when I granted this respite to my enemies," end of quote. The thought may have occurred to him to ignore the truce, which was not directly binding to him, and carry on the fight with the aid of those men who were willing to join him in his defiance. Edward III had sent direct orders under his privy seal on July the 20th, commanding the English captains in peremptory terms to cease fighting. In about the middle of August, Sir Philip Courtney arrived off Brittany with the ships of the Western Admiralty to bring the army home. Deprived of his army, John de Montfort acceded to the truce with ill grace. But he would not back it with a public oath, and he kept with him rather more than 200 garrison troops, allowed by the terms. He even tried to form a fresh army in conjunction with former English captain of Luzon, Sir John Cresswell. These attempts at continued resistance was snuffed out by Bertrand de Guesclin and Olivier de Clisson, who arrived at the duchy with a substantial force at the end of August 1375. John de Montfort's duchy was now, for all practical purposes, bounded by the walls of Auray and Brest. Knowles' castle at Derval no longer heard of or had probably been abandoned. The only conquest which John de Montfort had shown for 3 months in the field was a small coastal force of St. Mathieu. Early in the following year, the Duke left Brittany and withdrew to his court of Flanders. It would be 2 years before he returned to his duchy. The truce was received in England with intense dissatisfaction. General opinion was that the conference had been a collusion sham in which the English ambassadors had gotten too close to their French counterparts. Their days were reported to have been filled with japes and jollies, and their nights with revelry and dancing. The elaborate formula obscuring the surrender of Saint-Sever deceived no one, and the abandonment of John de Montfort was seen as a shameful waste of a golden opportunity. Some said that the Duke of Lancaster had simply been duped, others that Latimer had been bribed. No one had a word to say for the garrison of Saint-Sever, whose courageous defense of the fortress over 10 months was largely forgotten. Catherine himself suffered particular abuse because he was a protege of Latimer and had made more money than anyone else from the surrender. He was destined to pass the rest of his life in and out of prison before being killed in a duel by one of his opponents. So, quite a mess for the English at this particular time, but an excellent position for the French. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.